Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to Suryoday Small Finance Bank Limited Q3 FY24 earnings conference call. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Bhaskar Babu Ramachandra, MD and CEO, Suryoday Small Finance Bank Limited. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon, everybody. On behalf of Suryoday Small Finance Bank, I extend a warm welcome to our Q3 and 9-month FY24 earnings conference call. I trust that everyone has had the opportunity to review the presentation for the quarter ending December 31st, 2023, which was uploaded on the stock exchanges. Now, let me provide an overview of Suryoday's performance for Q3 and 9 months for FY24. The gross advances of our bank witnessed a growth of 40.5% year-on-year from 5,408 crores in 9-month FY23 to 7,600 crores in December 2023. On the disbursement front, the bank has recorded a growth of 34.9% from 3,396 crores to 4,580 crores on a year-on-year basis. The disbursement has grown across all our products, with Vikas Loan growing by 165% year-on-year. As of December 2023, customer base stood at 26.3 lakhs, a growth of 20% over the 9 months of the previous fiscal. This growth in our customer base signifies the success of our customer-centric approach and our ability to meet their evolving financial needs. In terms of profitability, our bank saw a significant rise in PAT from 38.8 crores to 155.1 crores for the period, 9-month period ending December 2023. The significant uptick is mainly driven by growth, improved operational efficiency, and asset quality optimization. Now, let me give some data on the key operational and financial metrics as of 9-month FY24, providing a comprehensive overview of our achievements and the factors driving our success. Coming to the business performance, our bank's gross advances is at 7,600 crores, with growth being driven across all products. The Vikas Loan portfolio has crossed the 2,000 crore mark. Vikas Loan is an unsecured business loan product offered to banks graduating JLG customers, which is covered under the Credit Guarantee Scheme, that is CGFMU. We have over 3.3 lakh Vikas Loan customers as on date. Our disbursements grew by 34.9% on a year-on-year basis to rupees 4,580 crores during the 9-month period. For the quarter gone by, the disbursement stood at 1,792 crores, a growth of 41.7% year-on-year. The collection efficiency for December 2023 stood at 95.6% on a 1-EMI-adjusted basis. On the deposits and borrowing front, we are delighted to share that as of 9-month FY24, our CASA stood at 1,200 crores, with CASA ratio of 18.5%. The overall deposits grew by 38.1% from 4,697 crores in December 2022 to 6,484 crores in December 2023. We continue to focus on building a sticky and granular retail deposit book. The retail deposits, as a percentage of overall deposits, currently stands at 82.5%. The sustained efforts of the bank to mobilize low-cost CASA have resulted in improved deposit mix, thereby leading to cost of funds remaining stable sequentially. Our borrowings as of 8 December 2023 form 23% of total liabilities, the majority of which is from refinancing institutions that are long-term in nature. On distribution and reach, our bank has a network of 672 branches, of which 99 branches are liability-focused, while 383 branches are asset-focused branches, with the balance comprised of URCs. The bank continues to invest in expanding the branch network, coupled with hiring feet on street, and aims to make each of our specialized branches into full-fledged service branches in the coming quarters. Our bank's GNPA has reduced to 2.9% in December 2023 from 4.2% in the corresponding period last year, and our net non-performing assets currently stands at 1.4% during the 9-month period FY24 from 2.7% in December 2022. Our net interest income stood at 691.5 crores as compared to 536.5 crores, an increase of 28.9% year-on-year. Net total income stood at 846 crores as compared to 599.9 crores, an increase of 41% year-on-year. our yield has improved to 20.2% in 9 months FY24 from 18.6% during the corresponding period last year. Our NIM has increased from 9.2% in 9 months FY23 period to 9.7% in December 2023. Our cost of funds has increased from 6.6% to 7.3% for the 9 month period. Cost to income, excluding the expenses towards credit guarantee, that is CGFMU scheme, stood at 56.9% as compared to 60.7% in 9 month period ending FY23. Cost to income, including CGFMU expenses for 9 month period, stood at 61.5%. We continue to remain well capitalized with our CRAR at 27.8%. Finally, to summarize, we are well on track to achieve our stated guidance in terms of overall growth. Despite challenges, the microfinance sector continues to behave in a resilient manner. Our retail assets, especially CV and Micro LAP, have gained momentum, which is in line with our long-term plan to an optimum product mix between secured and unsecured book. With most of our unsecured book being covered under the credit guarantee scheme CGFMU, the book, in a way, is quasi-secured. Going forward, we will continue to further deepen our footprint in existing geographies by offering the entire bouquet of our current products to our customer base and also expanding our footprint in a few newer geographies. Our bank continues to have a strong focus on financial inclusion and plans to further deepen the penetration by offering PMJJY, PMSBY and other inclusion schemes in a substantially deep manner to ensure financial growth and stability of the households we serve. Thank you, and over for question and answer.
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handset while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. First question is from the line of Anil Tulsiram from Contrarian Value Edge. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you, sir. Thank you for the opportunity. I have three related questions on Vikas loan. First is, what percentage of Vikas loan customers' household income is above 3 lakh? And second is RBI increased risk rate on unsecured loan applicable on the Vikas loan? And the third is, what is the target mix between Vikas loan and the group loans for the next 3 to 5 years? I'm not looking for an exact breakup, but want to understand the broad direction and strategy as far as the unsecured microfinance loan is concerned. Thank you.
Thanks, Anish. So as far as the Vikas loan is concerned at the household level, as you know, that's not the average household income for individual. Approximately in our segment is around 15,000. Even if there are around two earning members, it hovers between 2.5 lakh to 3.5 lakh. Currently, 65% of our Vikas loan customers have a retail match. We are nuancing our income capturing mechanism in a way that we are able to get a clear understanding of the household income. So in the last 9 months, we are kind of good. I think closer to around 5 to 6% of our customers currently on basis of our data which we collect are above 3 lakh rupees. But the intent is that whether if it is less than 3 lakh, it will be microfinance loan. If it is above 3 lakh, if we have the other documents like Udyam Aadhar, it becomes classified MSME. Else it will be treated as a non-MFI. If required, it will even classified as a personal loan. Currently, it is about around 5% as we capture the data, but we want to further nuance it. As far as the mix is concerned, as of now, it is not that we have put up product mix. As a graduating, the customer comes through the microfinance JLG model to become a customer of SuryoDay. On graduating, based on their eligibility, they become Vikas loan customers. They become eligible for Vikas loan. They choose either to stay as a JLG or they graduate into VL customer. The ticket sizes are not substantially different. It is for a second cycle, if you are giving around 50,000 in JLG, here it can go up to 75. Most of the customers choose to take what they are comfortable with. Currently, the ratio is around 45-55 in terms of portfolio, 55% being VL portfolio at this point of time. And maybe not the number will more likely hover between a 40-60 or a 50-50 at best. So we have not hard-coded any number that, because it's all ultimately for the graduating customers.
This is the third one. The regulations relating to the MFI to be classified for the risk rate. So it doesn't.
No, it is not. They've allowed it for NBFCs. So our position is that it is not a consumption loan, it is not a individual loans. But across overall as a sector, as you to our understanding, is that currently we are classifying it as a normal business loan, not as a personal with higher weightage. However, given our capital adequacy, even if we have to kind of give a higher weightage, we'll still be very, very comfortable and much above the regulatory CRAR requirement, much above. Thanks, sir.
Okay. Sir, I have two, three related questions on liabilities. Earlier, we guided that we want to maintain 30% of our funding from refinance institutions. In light of the recent informal guidance of RBI on the credit deposit ratio, is there any change in the thought process? That is the first question.
We will continue to kind of, as we kind of write from our plan, is a 30% of it. Usually, when your credit deposit ratio is substantially higher, the gap is usually filled in the banking system through the short-term borrowing, which is the money market borrowing. So SFBs, by and large, if they have a gap, if a CD ratio is higher, it is filled in by long-term refinancing options from NABARD, SIDBI, NHB. However, as a bank, your CD ratio cannot be substantially higher than 100%. So to that extent, we will have, while we still continue to have around 20-25%, it may not be 30, to maintain, make sure that our CD ratio is also comfortable and less than 100%. That will be a realignment. Over to Kanishka.
And also, Anil, this is a little bit situational. So if you look at the rates today prevailing in the market, IBPC makes better sense than a refinancing. So at this particular point in time, we are constantly evaluating IBPC as an option for funding rather than, refinancing from NABARD or SIDBI. That's the situation likely to be for current quarter and the next quarter. And then we will evaluate again how the things change.
Right. And sir, 10% of your deposits from the deposit disclosure, 10% of deposits are from Delhi and 6% from Gujarat. So is it bulk deposit or retail? Just trying to understand the nature of the deposit because don't have branches in these regions, right?
No, we do. So like we have indicated in our statements that around 18% of our deposits are only bulk. And that's largely the case across geography, right? So we don't have a heavy reliance on bulk deposits overall as a bank, and similar is the case for any particular region.
Because we know in the last couple of years, right from inception, our reliance on bulk deposits were not more than 30% at any point of time, and now it's closer to
18%. Oh, I think it's a great achievement that with less branches, we are able to raise 10% deposits from Delhi. I think it's excellent. And last question, sir, you mentioned something about full-fledged branches. So are you converting liabilities branches into asset branches or asset branches into liabilities branches? What exactly you meant?
So I think what's happening is that the most of our branches are focused on inclusive finance, which is their asset branches, while we also do small deposits from our existing customers. So go forward, we are all planning to convert that into what we call internally as composite branches, which will also provide full-fledged deposit products. So most of the branches are right. There are very large branches, have around 7,500 to 10,000 already existing ISBO customers. So we are in the process of converting. We already do have around closer to around 25 branches which are converted branches offering all the products. So which means that there will be two teams who will be operating. One will be focused on deposits and one focused on our inclusive finance segment, which also includes assets and liabilities. So as the model it has stabilized, now the intent is to really probably convert for closer to around 25 to 30 branches or more during the next financial year.
Thank you, sir. That's it from my side.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Ankit Gupta from Bamboo Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you so much. So I just wanted to check with you, we've been hearing some stress being developing across the...
Sorry to interrupt, Mr. Ankit. Your voice is very low. Can you please speak a little louder?
Thanks for the opportunity and congratulations for a great work. We've been hearing about some stress being building across, microfinance sectors, especially on the rural side and on, semi-urban side. So if you can share your experience, what is your view on the stress being indicated by, some players in the industry? And how do you see this impacting our delinquencies as well as growth going forward?
Yeah, Ankit, the numbers published by MFIN and Equifax and other credit bureaus on microfinance data is available, so I won't really comment on overall basis. We are not seeing any on as a bank into the segment. We are not seeing any specific stress areas getting created. And as we move into with the Vikas loan where you think we deal with the customer one-to-one based on their capability. And we always kind of maintain that this is a 2-2.5% credit loss business on year-on-year. Sequentially, it does not happen every year. This is the reason that even in, when we entered into a year back, we started covering our entire portfolio in CGMO, not in terms of an year-on-year. One-off even do keep happening for various reasons, once in 4 years and 5 years. We wanted to make sure that we are covered under CGFMU. But in our portfolio performance, as we are given, it has always been around 95-96% on a 1 EM adjusted basis. Currently, our focus is can you at least understand the remaining 4%, which you are not able to collect on a month-on-month basis, on a regular basis. What exactly is that? Is it because of stress? Is it because of an issue? Or is it because of lack of a structured fallout from us when the customer is not paying on the due date? Our Vikas loan portfolio currently can do work, collection is around close to 98%. It used to be at 99.5, and we want to really kind of engage with the customer and take it back to 99.5. We're not seeing any pockets of large credit, but however, that's it. In any market which grows and where the funding or ticket size goes up in any pocket or in a particular local geography, we have always seen stress kind of getting built up, gets repeated. I think that's part of the nature of the business, and each one will have to play their risk appetite accordingly.
Okay. Thank you, Nishant.
Thank you. Before we move to the next question, a reminder to the participant, anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one. Next question is from the line of Deepak Poddar from Sapphire Capital. Please go ahead.
Hello, am I audible?
Yes, you are audible.
Thank you very much, sir, for the opportunity. So, first up, just wanted to understand, you mentioned we are not seeing any specific stress, right? I mean, some of the players in your industry and we are talking about in Tamil Nadu, there are some problems because of which they are seeing increasing stress. And Tamil Nadu, we have about 25-26% of our book. So any thought process on that?
We haven't really come across, ours has been broadly the same, what it was around 2 months back.
No.
I have not also heard anything in terms of any specific pocket of stress building up in Tamil Nadu. I have heard in Punjab and some of the northern states because of rumors getting spread on loan waivers. We haven't heard of anything in Tamil Nadu at all.
And neither in Punjab as well.
We are not operating, we are not present in Punjab, so, but whatever we heard is there has been certain instances, but some in few states, but we are not in any of the states we operate. We are mostly in the west and south.
Okay, fair enough. And sir, in the previous calls, I think we have mentioned that we are looking to end this quarter at a 2.75 kind of a ROA and maybe next 18 months, 3-4% kind of a ROA. So how do we stand there?
So, for the third quarter, our ROA is around 2.25. With the way the things are looking, we expect our ROA to be a little over 2.5 for the last quarter. We have in mind to increase our PCR, so that's something that you need to be cognizant about. So as of now, with the kind of growth momentum that we have built, we expect our fourth quarter ROA to be north of 2.5%.
Okay, and what about 3-4% ROA in 18 months? I mean, maybe what FY25 end or first quarter FY26 is where, I mean, that 18 months is what we're talking about, right?
The way we are looking at it is that now I think clearly, which we articulated at some point of time and kept repeating is that I think banking is a real long-haul business. I think instead of taking calls in terms of what exactly the numbers really play out at the end of the 12th month and 18th month, we're pretty clear we'll be focusing in terms of the core, which is around a good solid 30-35% growth in terms of assets, little more higher in terms of liabilities, completely stay granular in as far as liabilities are concerned, and build a strong momentum and highly focused in terms of delivering a core inclusion products to our inclusive finance customers. And that sometimes would lead to a couple of 10 basis points more, 10 basis points less, and we'll continue to cover robustly under CGFMU, even if we are treating that more as an investment for that one-off event if it were to happen, if at all ever it were to happen. And we want to stay focused on the fundamentals. So to the point, this is a larger guidance. Within that, I'm sure we are not going to be now spending too much of that in terms of a 10 basis points now. But however, we would love to have a good cushion as a floating provision, CGFMU cover, good growth, good quality growth, and that would be in the region of 30-35% for the next 1.5 years.
Okay. Fair enough. That's very helpful, sir. And just one last thing, I think in terms of our unsecured book, it's close to about 58-60% right now. So how do we see that mix changing over the next 2-3 years?
As we always said, 50-50 is our comfort. But however, again, as you mentioned, that even within this, our majority of the portfolio of inclusive finance is covered in the CGFMU. While it is not a security, it at least takes care in terms of that one-off event ever were to happen. It acts as a big comfortable cushion and enables us also to really focus on business loans to our customers in a little more meaningful manner, including the ticket sizes.
Okay, understood. Fair enough. I think that's it from my side. All the very best, sir. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Karan Mehra from Mehta Investments. Please proceed.
Hello, sir. Thank you for the opportunity. Couple of questions from my end. So where do we see the pre-provisioning operating profit in FY25? If you can give a number on a quarterly basis, as previously the stated number was around 120 crores per quarter.
Yeah, so I think we will stand by that guidance as things stand now. It's likely to improve a little bit from where we are. So for example, for the month of December, we had a pre-operative profit of more than 40 crores. By the end of the quarter, we will be able to deliver consistently about 45 crores and thereabouts. So on a full year basis, if you look, we will be talking in more in terms of 550 to 600 crores of pre-operative profit for the next full year.
Understood. And how do we see the NIMs moving going forward, and do we see any pressure on NIMs?
For the immediate future, no. We have been able to stabilize our cost of funds. As you would have noticed, last quarter the cost of funds was 7.5. It stays 7.5 this time, this quarter as well. So I think with the little bit of increase that can happen in cost of fund and the change in mix towards Vikas loan, we will be able to preserve our NIMs for now.
Sure, that answers my questions. Thank you and all the very best.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Mishi Shah from Shah Securities. Please go ahead.
Hello. Thank you for giving me the opportunity. I have the question is that what is the yield in micro LAP? And do we also offer micro housing loan which amounts to loan below 5 lakh rupees?
Yeah, so we do have a micro home loan portfolio which is around 200 crores today. We have been working and building that portfolio for the last 15 to 18 months. Our IRR is more in the range of around 18%. And that's what we have constantly been able to maintain in that particular portfolio.
Okay, okay. So yeah, that answers my question. All the very best.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Tanay Jain from Centrum Broking Limited. Please go ahead.
Hi, am I audible?
Yes, you are audible.
Yeah, thank you for the opportunity. My first question is, in Karnataka state, like, what is the strategy? Like, we have presence nearly same as our top performing states like Tamil Nadu, but the contribution to our portfolio is very low. Can you throw some light on this?
Karnataka, why your portfolio is low?
So, yeah. So, Karnataka is a growing geography for us. And Karnataka is one market where both inclusive finance as well as micro mortgage has been performing exceedingly well. So our focus will continue to be in that market, and that market will continue to grow in the given quarters.
Okay.
Branches in Karnataka now. I think from a percentage growth, the state which is growing of the fastest at this point of time for us is Karnataka, basically because they put up close to 30 new branches now at this point of time.
All right. And my second question is, in retail assets, the sequential drop in PAR 30 plus is 50 bills, which is impressive. Which portfolio is contributing and the reasons for the same?
So the past story has really been very good for retail assets. So if you look at CV portfolio, start of the year our PAR is somewhere closer to 20% and it's now come down to 10. And even in mortgage where our PAR used to be in mid-teens start of the year, we are closer to around 11%. So for both the key mortgage secured businesses, our PAR has improved, especially in the last two quarters.
So these both are like the major contributing factors.
Correct, yes.
Alright. And also for DLG and IS exposure, can I know the exposure in Punjab, Rajasthan and Haryana state for the DLG IS?
So we are not present in Punjab and Haryana. Rajasthan is one of the nascent growing markets for us. Rajasthan exposure as a percentage of portfolio is around 2.5 to 3%.
Alright. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Participant, to ask a question, you may press star and one. Next question is from the line of Kedar Shah from AK Securities. Please proceed.
Hello, sir. Good afternoon. Sir, I have a couple of questions. The first one is that on the product front, how is our micro LAP product as a product performing, and can you elaborate some details on same in terms of average ticket size, tenor, and how much is the collection efficiency in that product?
What we call this is a micro mortgages, both micro home loans and micro LAP put together, which are funding less than 10 lakhs at this point of time. However, as a program, we want to take it up maximum up to 15 lakhs, but the average ticket size currently is less than around 5 lakhs. And the range is between around 3.5-4 lakhs to 8 lakhs, pricing of 18. Currently, it's a near 100% collection portfolio with a GNP of probably around 0.3%. And 7-8. But this is a new product, we just there in the last 1.5-2 years, building up pretty well, and we do not really want to scale it substantially at this point of time. Currently, the disbursement is around 15 to 18 crores. The intent is to keep moving up the disbursement to 2 crores every quarter, so probably are naming at around closer to 50 crores at the end of the next financial year. The portfolio size is currently around approximately 200 crores, and it grows by around approximately 10 crores every month at this point of time.
Okay, so that helps. So my second question is regarding our expansion plans. So are we looking to enter any newer geographies like Bihar? So if, let's say Bihar has a lot of potential in microfinance sector. So any thoughts on that?
At this point of time, we are not planning to enter Bihar or Jharkhand. When we say we are not planning to enter, it means that we don't want to. We are not entering any of the large presence. We will always put pilot branches of 1 or 2 in each of the states that we are not present. Like probably Andhra Pradesh, Jharkhand and Bihar are 3 states where we will put a few branches and check out our experiences and grow subsequently later. But no big plans of growth in any of the states, newer states at this point of time for next financial year.
Okay, so that helps. Thank you.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Manav Vijay from Deep Financial Consultancy Private Limited. Please go ahead.
Yes, thank you very much, sir, for the opportunity. So my first question is regarding the affordable housing loans portfolio that you have. So on a quarter-on-quarter basis, that portfolio has come down by 16%. Anything specific to read over here?
Which one are you talking about?
Affordable housing loans. So this is a 635 crore portfolio. Last quarter it was 754 crores.
No. So, Manav, what we used to do, we used to club MHL into housing loan. Now we have actually separated and put it in others. So earlier, MHL portfolio, which is micro housing loan portfolio of 130 crore, it was we used to put in home loan, HL. Now we have shifted to others.
Okay.
It has not come down.
So probably we'll have a separate category as a
Government
as micro mortgages. Yeah.
Sure. Okay. And over there, even I believe the GNPA has moved up to 2.2%. Is this within, let's say, the risk parameters that you have, or this is slightly more than that?
Yeah, we would want to improve that number for sure, Manav. But yes, I mean, for the last two quarters, it has been in this particular range. Our endeavor is to, you know, get that number to under 2 in the first place. Yeah.
Okay. The third question is regarding the CD ratio. So we are at 110 as of now. So I understand that you answered, I mean, that explained something in the first question itself. So at least in the near term, that means for next, let's say, 2-3 quarters, the probability of this number falling to 100% is low, or we will try and aim for 100%?
No, we will achieve that 100% number. It's a regulatory commitment from our side as well. As you would aware, when we started this journey 2 years ago, we made a commitment to, you know, first reduce it to 120 by the end of last financial year, which we did. We promised 110% by the end of this financial year, which is where we are. And by the end of the next financial year, we have committed and we will deliver 100% CD ratio.
Okay, this is fantastic. The next question is, even on the JLG, our NPAs have moved up to 5.8, I believe, compared to 3.7 that we had in quarter one. I believe that one of the participants did ask you about some of the stress that many companies have talked in their quarterly con calls. So you guys are not witnessing any stress, and if it is not the case, then why this number has moved up?
No, there are a couple of things. One, we have now started splitting JLG and Vikas. The way to kind of look at it is that this is the best good customer are kind of moving up and getting capital Vikas. We'll start giving, since Vikas is growing in the portfolio equivalent to around JLG at this point of time, we are giving the splits together. The best way to read of that inclusive finance segment to read it together. But however, we are also really looking at the JLG GNP coming down substantially. We'll have to have same focus as we have in terms of collections, in terms of the customer. But since the graduating or a good customers are getting classified separately, where you see a GNP of 0.9, put together is what ideally would be to look at the segment as a whole. So this, in my view, is not a reflection of any specific stress we are seeing in any pocket, because in all the markets we operate JLG today, we operate also the customer. Every branch will have the ratio in terms of 60-40, 2-40-60, depending on somewhere the customer is a higher portion or portfolio. So what we said that we are not seeing that stress in any particular geography on an overall basis. JLG, I think we'll have to nuance a little more for better to kind of look at what, it's not a question of collection drop alone. It is just that it spills over and there's a lack of follow-up in terms of which one moves to 1 to 30 bucket to 30 to 60. That is, the acceleration is a little faster, unlike in a Vikas loan, where each and every customer is targeted and continuously communicated with, and hence we could do a collection of more than 99.5% in the current bucket. There it is less than just about 99% in JLG, which leads to an increase in terms of the GNP. Our focus would be on the related measures.
Okay. So my fourth question, so the next question, for last four quarters, our JLG book is actually, I was just taken around 2,500 crores. There are Vikas loan book has moved up by almost 70-80% from almost 700 crores to now 2,000 crores. Now, over next, let's say, 4 or 5 quarters, let's say till the end of FY25, so this JLG book growth will continue to remain subdued and Vikas loans will continue to dominate the disbursements?
So, like I said in an earlier part in the call, currently the mix is around 45% VL and 55% JLG. Steady state target is 50-50. So that's where we are inching towards, and we will try to maintain that kind of a portfolio mix in inclusive finance.
One of the mixes also will depend on the new customers you're acquiring, which broadly depends on the new branches that you open. So now we have around 70 branches which have opened. Even on an average basis, if they start generating around 300 to 350 customers on month-on-month for the next 2 years, so likely that we will have around closer to 125 to 150 crores or more in terms of new customers with the JLG disbursement. So we'll have to balance that. So when you say 50-50, it is more likely to come out of a new customer getting added in existing branches, substantial new customers getting added in newer branches.
Sure. My last question is regarding, sir, so the comment that you made, making all your branches as composite branches, so we have, as of now, 672 branches, and correct me if I heard you wrong. You said that around 25 to 30 are actually composite as of now, correct?
Right.
And you intend to convert another 25 to 30 into composites?
Yes. So 91 branches, when you say deposit focused branches, they are full-fledged deposit focused. However, in 34 of those branches, which both those businesses operate together, which is inclusive finance business on one side and deposit focused business on the other. So the intent is to convert of the 383 asset focused outlets at this point of time, so 30 to 50 probably in the next year as composite branches.
Okay, and does it require even hiring of fresh manpower as well?
Yes, yes, it could. But lean, we would operate in a 1+2 for every branch.
Sure. And this employee expense, which has moved up almost 50% on a YOY basis from 64 crores to now 93 crores, and it is growing by almost, I believe 12-13% quarter on quarter. So what kind of a run rate we should expect, let's say, in FY25?
Run rate in terms of salary bill?
Yes, sir, employee cost on a quarterly basis maybe.
The intent is to really kind of have it, the growth in salaries to be 50% of the growth in the assets. And some of these are clear investments, you don't want to really cut the corner. Some of the learning experiences have been, if you try to chase higher productivity in terms of number of customers handled per employee in the JLG business, during even times of marginal stress, it becomes extremely unmanageable. So there are certain slacks to kind of delete in the system for managing such eventualities, and the targeted one would be the growth in salary bills to approximately closer to 50% of the growth in the assets.
Okay. Thank you and all the best, sir.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. We have our next follow-up question from the line of Anil Tulsiram from Quadrarian Value Edge. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity again. Sir, many of the fintechs which are lending 10 to 50,000 are lending to some of the same customers as microfinance industry. But they are not following the RBI guidelines on MFI, and they simply take the declaration from these customers that their income is above the RBI threshold. So is it resulting in any over-leverage in the industry, and do you see any risk from this trend?
Most of our customers are the women of the household, so we are not seeing any trend lines in that as far as the Bureau is concerned. However, it is the men of the household likely to be, while they don't have exactly data in terms of the percentage of customers who are men in the digital small ticket loan, likely that it will be a majority of it. So currently we have started combining and started having a composite look in terms of including at least the co-applicant, which majority of the time happens to be the spouse or the son of the lady of the household. So we are seeing, but not seeing any alarming numbers at this point of time. That's based on the pure credit bureau data.
Got it. And so the second question is on the rural branches. So is the business break-even here, and how do we operate through direct management or through BC network, and what exactly are we doing here? So that's the question there.
Well, then, by and large, a very direct model. We have one just large BC. We probably around closer to around 100 crores of our entire 4,500 crore portfolio, which is less than 3% is BC. 97% of that is direct business.
And do we break even here in the unbanked the rural branches, or is it incurring losses in these branches?
We are actually in semi-urban and outskirts, and as you know, even in a smaller tier 3 towns, 5 kilometers from the center of the town, these are the rural belts, semi-rural belts and rural belts. So we are not hardcore a rural microfinance company. We are more of a semi-urban and catering to the rural belts in and around the tier 3, tier 4 towns. Our URCs are pure unbanked rural, and currently we have 190. Of which closer to around 90-95 branches is where we also do other businesses, and the rest of the around 100 are mainly focused in terms of small ticket liabilities serving the rural households in those markets.
Got it. Sir, and the last question is again on the liabilities. So what percentage of liabilities currently we are able to acquire digitally and through partnership, and what's the target in next, say, 2-3 years? What percentage of total liabilities we want to acquire digitally and through partnership?
No, so at this particular point in time, we are running a few use cases with some of our fintech partners, so the numbers are very small. Almost entire deposit is coming from our own franchise. Over the period of year, next couple of years, yes, we will try to move that number a little bit up. But I think our focus right now is being able to build and deepen our own franchise.
And can you elaborate more on the initiatives which you are taking for digital, like video KYC or any specific steps which you are taking to increase the sourcing digitally?
Yeah, so I will have our colleague Sandeep, who is our Chief Product Officer, talk to you about that.
So at this moment, what we've done is we've actually strengthened our middleware and the backend in such a manner that it is now almost ready for our foray into digital partnerships, which is what Kanishka stated, that we are in the verge of starting. We are doing a few and we are in the verge of expanding. We see that expanding to I would say, the early single digit or touching a double digit number over the next 12 to 18 months. That's what we see clearly, because from an infrastructure point of view, digital infrastructure point of view, we've reached that. And if you look at video KYC, we've recently done the major change in our video KYC, which brings us not only at par with the rest of the industry, but will give us an advantage over there. While we've gone live only a week back with that, we continue to see good customer demand over that side. So digitalization in the next couple of quarters from a video KYC front also will see an increase from our side. So early stage for us. However, in the next 12 to 18 months, we will see a jump both in the digital partnerships as well as the digital domain within the bank itself.
Good. And sir, one last question. A couple of SFBs have started partnering with some brokers to offer a 3-in-1 DMAT account to increase the stickiness of the customers and attract the deposits. So we already done it or planning to do it. What's our thought process on this?
So, Himanshu, that's right. We have entered into a partnership with one of our partners, and that would be launched within this month to offer complete wealth management and the 3-in-1 accounts to service our existing and, of course, the new clients for the bank across the spectrum.
Thank you, sir. That's it. And thank you for all the detailed answer and all the best.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Prabal from Ambit Capital. Please proceed.
Am I audible?
Yes, you are audible. Please proceed.
Thank you. My first question is on the write-off policy that we have. So, in the MFI segment, after how many days do we write something?
No, so our write-off policy is in line with IRAC. So 1 year after it turns NPA, we write it off. There is no possibility of recoverability. But what we do is that we progressively start providing in terms of asset impairment. So immediately upon it becoming an NPA, we provide 25%. And every quarter, if it is not pulled back to and regularized, then we provide 25% additional. So that's the progressive policy that we follow.
Okay, so every quarter 25, and by this, by the end of first year, 100% of the book is
returned. Absolutely, yes.
Okay. And so this would be our... And how frequent are our collections across the world?
No, we have a monthly cycle, and that's what we have been doing for quite some time now.
Okay. So historically, have you observed any trend that, let's say, a monthly cycle is better for the customer or a fortnight cycle is more stringent for the customer? Any such observations that you have had in the past?
We are one of the earliest ones to move to a monthly model, because customers felt that they can't, and usually they have minimum of 2 loans from various companies, so they have to attend 4 times. It's 8 times, and they'll have to take a break from their work. They're busy. So we kind of chose to move on a monthly basis long, long back during probably 2010-11, continue to stay put this model. What we kind of understand is that while the touch points of the customer have to be far more frequent than once in a month, it worked very well when there was a near 100% collection. But currently, given that it's around close to 99% is what we are able to collect from a current bucket, and just about around 96% on overall. The rest of the 4% of the customer will have to find out a mechanism rather than putting all the 100% of the customers into weekly model, which means they will have to kind of meet and make the repayment. More than 70% is non-digital, so we'll have to bring in cash and hand out the cash. So it continues to be on a monthly model with a little bit more in terms of reaching out to the customer through automated calls, bot, and reminder mechanism. What to target the remaining 4 customers.
Yes. And so in the Vikas form, are these individuals also required to come to the group meetings, and how is the collection different for these versus a DLG customer?
No, it's kind of, we don't insist on meeting them on a particular day. Most of the customers deposit the money in their bank account, which they have a Suryoday. On the 7th, approximately closer to 70% of the customers payment gets cleared through the bank. And currently, we have around 30% of the customers making payment directly from their UPI handle to our bank account, not even coming and depositing cash, even in the branch or through any DC. The intent is to take the 30% to 50%. It's a graduating customer, so we are not... We visit them, we meet them, we even try to attempt to meet them once in a month, but it is not from the purpose of collection.
Okay, but they are not supposed to now come to the group meeting as they are for the other GLG
customers? No, not at all. I think we'll have to realize the customers do not want, in our experience, our view of that, is that customers are good to kind of be part of a group for a couple of cycles, maybe one cycle, two cycles. Thereafter, they would like to be treated and assessed based on their capability, on their intent. And if you have a mechanism which is strong enough to coordinate with the customer, that's why it took time to move this product, to scale the product, making sure that not meeting the customer is not going to lead you into a delinquency or a default, as you would see in the VL portfolio, where it is not meeting up for a collections and once in a month on a designated time. It has fairly played out well across all geographies. Our intent is to really kind of not take it for granted and build more and more mechanisms to ensure that we are in touch with the customer, but not obligating the customer to come in on a particular time. And quite a bit of the customers walk into the branches at their convenience to deposit money in their account.
Okay. And sir, do we have any mechanism of deposits with these individual customers, maybe as an escrow mechanism, because these are more like unsecured loans? So in case they default, we can utilize these deposits to cover up for them?
No, I think the thing is that the customers are graduating. I think microfinance customers are not any more homogeneous. They are not necessarily having an income of around 1.2 lakhs at the household level. Majority of the customers do have an household income of around 2 lakhs. Much probably, quite a few will have more than 3 lakhs once they start capturing it very deep. And the intent of us is to really kind of come out with product which can meaningfully cater to them, and over a period of time completely digital, both in terms of delivery as well as in terms of collections.
Yes. And just one last question on employee productivity. So how is the KRA of the employee designed? Is it more towards the disbursement targets that they have to meet, or is it more like the number of customers that they have to acquire?
We are working on very different things, so we don't really work on a high pressure, do business at any cost or do collect at any cost, even during COVID, and we'll continue to have that. So it's more in terms of a program match based approach. With the mix of both, the collections and current bucket across the businesses, the broad thing in terms of our monthly incentive is beyond 99% collection in the current bucket, so stop the leakage there and continue to work. And business has a weightage around 50%. I would say that looks reasonably liberal, but not hard-coded in terms of only one of the factors.
And the business side is more towards the disbursement, or it is more towards the number of borrowers that the employees can get from that?
Only the number of borrowers in the IF segment, as well as the rest of it is concerned, is the number of cases and the value both in the retail assets.
Perfect. Thank you, sir, and all the very best.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Sajjan Upadhyay from Clay Capital. Please proceed.
Hi, thanks. Just a quick question, trying to understand the scenario going forward. Would the current, political environment in any case could influence collection efficiencies in near future? And if you could kind of, indicate what would have happened in last cycle, in a last similar cycle. Thanks.
Depends. In some of this where there has been aggressive commitments or promises made by politicians, in fact, didn't last beyond even half a day. In some times, it kind of gets picked up and gets amplified. So it's not to be taken for granted that sometimes the small noises become magnified, which we saw in the Nagpur region during the demon. So as of now, it is not really having any impact. And even some of the campaigns which started, illegal loan waiver campaign, MFIN has been able to do a very good job in terms of reaching out across both the regulator and to the bureaucracy and to the government. And I think this is a very welcome step, more proactive than waiting for incidents to happen. So we're fairly confident that together as an industry we'll be able to manage this pretty well this time than we probably would have done in the previous times.
So it would be fair to assume that the collection efficiencies will stay in a normalized range, except for, you know, certain exceptional behavior, nothing that will impact collection efficiencies.
I guess so.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Rajgopalan Ramanathan, who is an individual investor. Please go ahead.
Just one question. Little concerned about the sharp increase in capital consumption. So two things. Is it on account of the increase in risk weights on the personal loans which the RBI has introduced? And second question is, have you accounted for 9 months profits when you spell out your capital adequacy ratio?
Yeah, so, you know, the recent circular of RBI on the risk weight has not impacted us by and large, right? So because the MFI portfolio continues to carry a 75% weight. And even on a quarter-on-quarter basis, sequentially, you will see that the increase in risk weight is in line with the 600 crore increase in the book size, right? So to that extent, I really don't think there's a higher amount of consumption of capital relative to the risk-weighted assets. On the other point of yours, whether the nine-month profits are considered or not, so from a regulatory point of view, we are only allowed to take the last audited financial, full-year financials net worth, you know, as the denominator. So the money that I have made in the 9 months is not reckoned for the purpose of calculating the capital adequacy ratio.
Okay, so which means your capital adequacy ratio technically is understated.
Correct, yeah.
Okay, and one last question is, have you decided on any potential dividend payouts in the final quarter?
No, not really. We are very much in the growth phase and we would like to preserve, you know, our equity and net worth for us to be able to invest and grow further.
That said, I think the decision is we'll take at the end of the financial year, Raj.
Understood. Just wanted to understand that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next follow-up question is from the line of Anil Tulsiram from Contrarian Value Edge. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. I have two, three questions again on Vikas Loan customers. So what percentage of customers have opened accounts with Citizens Bank as the first? And second is, what percentage use it as a primary account? And last one is, what percentage have made it as primary to receive government subsidy? And do we encourage it? And does it really matter whether they make it or not as the primary account to receive subsidy?
I mean, all customers have their savings account. Around 20% of that is operative account, meaningfully. We do not have, many of that is not seeded for Aadhaar. So that we're educating them. We don't want them to kind of go through any inconvenience by seeding them by default. So it's very, very minimal. We started this exercise now, but we don't have much of the Aadhaar linked or seeded accounts, which means that we are not getting any flow except for accounts which are open through the CSP channels. So they choose where they would have put it, and because there is an operating mechanism. 70% of the installment comes through the bank account on the due date, which is in 7th and max 10th, 2 dates. And remaining comes through either digitally or they come and deposit money in the branches. The amount of cash collection in the Vikas Loan product is less than 10% at this point of time.
So then in the guidance statement, we say that 30% of the Vikas Loan customers make online payments. What exactly that means then? If 30% means, what is the 70%? You are saying only 10% take cash. Then how do you reconcile these two figures?
30% does directly from their bank account to our bank account through any mechanism, directly by the customer. Quite a bit of the customers come to the branch and deposit well before the due date or go into CSP points and transfer it to the CSU point. What we talk about digitally is that coming from the UPI handle of the customer or from IMPS directly into our account. It is not even that they're going to some CSU point and depositing into our bank account, which we kind of debit at the due date or after that.
and 10% cash is where the customer is not paying. We go to them, we run the doorstep, and then we engage them where they make the payment. That will be less than 10% in terms of cash. So it's not remaining all 90% is non-cash, but that is not a cash handled at the field level by our executives. It's either the customer coming to the branch or they go to the CSV points and deposit into their account, which we debit on the due date.
Got it. And sir, the last question is on the weekly and the monthly. Is it fair to say that the weekly and the fortnightly collection is more relevant for the NBFCs which are operating in the rural and rural places, and we are operating more in the semi-urban and urban, so for us monthly is right? How do we look at it?
Probably. We don't operate so much in the deep rural for us to offer any comments on that. But I think more in terms of whichever, with respect to organizations, find it effective as a drill, it works well. What probably there are not many organizations which offer across all weekly, fortnightly, monthly. So we do offer to in certain branches to weekly, but we kind of find that it is not anything substantial. So we continue to majority of the customer happen to be choosing only monthly repayment option. And in cases like Vikas, where they have a surplus that they want to make weekly, they can transfer the money to the bank account. And what we are also trying to kind of roll out is a daily saving product, especially for customers who have got QR code and where they have got daily transactions happening in their account.
Got it. Thank you, sir. That's it from us. And thanks a lot.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, that was the last question for the day. I would now like to hand the conference over to the management for the closing comments.
Thank you. Thank you for participating. And we look forward to your continued support. Thank you very much.
Thank you. On behalf of Nuvama Wealth, that concludes this conference. Thank you all for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines.